2, episode 38. My name is Molly, and I play Eden Milan, the noble sorceress slash wizard. Let's introduce our GM.
Hi, I'm James, and I'm the GM of Sometimes Heroes. And what happened last time on Sometimes Heroes, Molly?
So as we wrapped up the last episode, Eden, while talking to Carter, found out that her brother, Quinn, who she has not seen in many years...
And he is her stepbrother, yes?
As far as she's concerned, he is her brother, but yes, technically, they do not have the same birth parents. Eden's adoptive parents are the actual biological parents of her quote-unquote brother. So Eden is the adopted sister of Quim. But she has known him for her entire life, so she just sees him as her brother.
Cool. So you heard this, and before the rest of the party was able to leave, quote, Sariel came out and told you to possibly see what you could get out of your brother information-wise before possibly pressing him about what's really going on. Wink, wink. With your
wink,
position.
Wink.
Yes. With your position as family. And then you left with Carter, spending a solid hour and a half waiting for all of the carts to get winched down the hill, but heading out well before dark came, getting on the road.
And leaving 4 very sad people behind me who were just bawling their eyes out, crying tears of sorrow at no longer being able to be around their hero, Eden.
Clearly. Somewhere you know there was an argument about who was the leader about the group, but Eden knows. It's her. As you are leaving the gates, as the carts are being taken down, you do see Sten up at the top speaking to Carter, and he waves to you. But soon enough, you're on the road. Is there anything that you could have handled pretty quickly that you want to get situated before you leave Sid's Toes?
During our last session, I think Eden took care of pretty much everything she wanted to take care of in Sid's Toes before the actual departure.
Okay. So you're all packed up. You're with a bunch of Avzal Ambersun troops. They are of mixed race. They're mostly hobgoblins, but they're also a relatively high degree of humans and elves among them, as well as a couple of regular goblins who appear to be mostly in the business of cooking and making sure everybody's boots are clean. But as you are traveling down the road for the first day, which you only get 6 hours out before it becomes too dark to travel on these large black paving stones, your caravan pulls off to the side and makes camp. And the guards seem restless and uneasy in the darkness. You hear a couple of them speaking about orcish raiders in the area and how it was foolish to leave so close to nightfall, that it would be better to have gotten to the plains and have left at morning.
Uh-oh. Well, that's going to make me nervous. I want to approach one of them and talk about this, because I didn't know that that was a risk.
You have a number of guards to approach. Is there any type of guard that you would want to come up to, or the caravan leader himself?
That would probably be best, yes.
You step up to this relatively grizzled hobgoblin, who you know his name to be Sotror.
So I want to ask him politely, not that I want to raise any alarms, but I couldn't help but overhearing you were talking about orcish raiders. I don't think I realized that that was a risk. Where have you been hearing about this?
He looks back at you because he's just been arranging the setup of the campground and says, "Don't you worry, miss. We'll handle you fine. If any of them come here, we'll kill them right nice. I'm not sure if you noticed, but there have been quite a few ears lining the path on the past few miles. Orcs have been quite the troublesome nuisance in this area."
Well, I guess I was really lost in thought during the first portion of the journey. Are you sure that you're confident about that? Because I don't mean to offend, but when I was listening to you earlier, everyone seemed very nervous about the prospect of getting attacked by one of these groups.
I'm not going to say it isn't likely, but I think we can handle it if it comes. You see, we've got maybe double the guard we need for a caravan like this, and when they look at us, it's gonna seem like pretty slim pickings. He points around to the carts, which seem to be loaded up one cart is specifically dedicated to a large tablet of stone that you remember you recovered, and the rest seem to be supplied with mostly just like provisions for the journey. Doesn't seem like large stacks of valuables, which many of the other carts and companies that have left the city seem to be laden down with.
Well, I trust you. I trust you and your team. So, yes, that is comforting. Thank you.
Of course. Sleep deeply, lady.
Thank you. You as well.
He smiles a big fangy smile at you and goes back to commanding his men. Later, Carter invites you to play game of cards over the firelight, but seems to just be nervously looking around like he isn't as mollified by this guard captain's assurances.
Something bothering you?
Well, it's just, you see, I'm so close to accomplishing my mission, it seems less and less likely that I'll get there the closer I get. It seems like when we're in the Cold Forge together, facing down danger after danger, on the precipice of death constantly, I didn't think about success. I just thought about surviving to the next minute. Now, with my prize so close at hand, it seems like anything could take it away from me.
Well, I will say that based on what we've managed to survive so far, I'm not sure what else could possibly get you or us at this point. And she's gonna reach over to the nearest log or tree that is not on fire and knock on it. You know, knock on wood.
You guys are, I assume, just sitting across a fallen log as you guys have pulled off the road into a clearing of sorts.
All right, I want to play Uno.
You guys are no longer friends. Carter loses at Uno and huffs away. No. You guys play cards for a short while. The sounds in the night seem to spook every single sentry and guard. A couple of times before you even fall asleep, there is somewhat of a hubbub which turns into a false alarm. But eventually you get back to sleep and wake up in the morning the next day and continue on your way. A few hours down the road, however, you find a burnt out caravan with a number of dead bodies around it. And there appears to be no semblance of the riches that these carts carried the day before.
Oh God, that's horrifying. How many dead bodies are we talking? Are we talking like 2 or like 30?
More like 30.
Oh, that's terrifying. It was clearly a robbery.
It was banditry. The caravan guards set about the somewhat somber business of burying the caravan before them and pushing the carts off the road, or chopping them up if they are no longer in a position to be moved via wheels, which takes a better part of half of the day. After a short while, one of these soldiers with you does a sort of half-hearted prayer for the dead before the group moves on, in a sense of alertness that they did not have even the previous evening. Is there anything you want to pester anybody about whilst you are traveling?
Well, I've already pestered Carter with all the questions that I had, so I don't think so at this time.
Okay, so the next couple of days pass without incident. The plains come into view. You trundle out onto this flat, almost glassy rock road out into plains of rolling and broken hills. All the earth and rock around you is black with a little bit of greenery pressing out of cracks. As you travel, you see some herds being grazed around, but the even the shepherds seem to be armed to the teeth. After a couple of days, you come into view of a small hill in the distance, which is slightly jagged, and you realize after a call goes out that, oh, that's Black Hill. This is the ancient orcish fortress that was conquered by Hadrian, the Emperor of Humans.
And very cleverly named.
Yes. The rest of the day involves you guys getting there. It's visible in the distance, but as you approach, you realize that it was much further away than you initially thought. It's actually quite large. And you arrive at the west gate of Black Hill and emerge through the gates into Lowtown and find yourselves looking up a slowly sloping street that heads up towards a keep atop the highest part of the hill. As you look up the street, like, every single building seems to get like a little bit nicer as it moves up the hill.
Frickin' gentrification.
Mm-hmm. The caravan seems intent on going straight to the keep, as does Carter. Do you want to head along with them?
Yes, I guess I will.
Okay, so you guys head through this city. The city seems to be bustling, and its style is completely different than anything you've really encountered before. There's a lot more wool and warmer clothes. The kilt seems to be a common article of clothing amongst men, as do long skirts with women. You do realize as you're traveling that it's gotten a bit nippy. It's a little colder. It is getting close to the end of fall, and you're pretty far north.
Well, that's depressing. Do I have adequate clothes for the cold?
You absolutely have adequate clothes for right now. If it gets to be like the dead of winter, you might be out of your element. You might have to buy something more specifically if you want to continue wandering around outside.
Gotcha.
Are you, just out of curiosity, are you riding atop Frisian or are you walking her into the city?
I think I would rather just walk and then just lead Frisian around.
Okay. So the caravan heads slowly through the streets. The streets are crowded, so it takes kind of a while. People keep getting in the way and making you guys stop. It's traffic, yay. But you get through town. You see a couple of things on the way. Firstly, as you were traveling down the main road, you pass a number of taverns, which continue to get steadily more fancy as you get towards the keep. But as you look around and sort of remember people talking about the city, you're like, oh, this is Tavern Row. This is where the trade buildings, they're all along the main street. And it gets more residential as you head outwards. In the distance to the north, there are four stacks emitting billowing black smoke from them. And to the south of town, right next to the keep, is this tall black spire that appears to be kind of angular and made of the same stone, the same black stone as the walls are made out of. But eventually you get to the keep's gates. And once you get there, the caravan kind of breaks up, except for the cart with the stone on it, which Carter begins to take towards the gate itself. So do you want to approach the gate with Carter?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In front of the gate are several Umbrian soldiers who all wear thick wool tartans and kilts with a degree of chain or plate armor around it. Their armor is a lot more, like, colorful than armor in Medina, but they see Carter coming and go to stop him, but he provides the appropriate paperwork and just includes you in his group, because there are several hobgoblins who are, like, manning the cart and whatnot. They allow you into the keep. Once you enter the courtyard, you can see that the keep includes this large central building, which you assume holds the palace and any administration buildings this kingdom may have. But there is one tower that stands out as much taller than the rest. Carter references it.
That's the North Tower. They used to have a wizard of the Celestial Tower who manned it, but over the last 50 or 60 years, they've never had one.
Why is that?
Their ties with Hadrian's Empire have diminished recently, and they're more closely aligned with the Avzon.
Ah, I see. Well, yeah, that'll do it.
You guys get into the courtyard, and several servants come out, as well as a young man with fine livery, large case over his back, and he looks noble in bearing and appearance, but he greets Carter warmly, and Carter addresses him as Hector. But Hector arranges for some servants to come pick up this cart and its stone contents to take them to the North Tower. But this whole time he's talking to Carter, Hector is looking at you sort of out of the corner of his eye.
With a suspicious look? With a confused look?
With a blatant, hey, girl.
Oh, that kind of look. Oh, Eden's just going to pretend not to notice.
Okay. This transaction goes down. You see Carter sort of, you can tell that he's very distressed at the fact that this is his baby, his achievement being taken out of his hands. But like, this is what has to happen. Carter's sort of like dragging it out, but it's happening. And eventually he comes back to you and the cart is being taken over there. But like, Hector is still just sort of standing there overseeing it.
I hate to see it go. We worked so hard for it. I hope it goes to good use.
So where are they taking it? What happens now?
They take it to the North Tower, and I guess I head back to Zograda.
Wow, so that's it then?
They have no need for an archaeologist now.
He has received a piece of paper that's like, we got the thing.
I go back to Zulgrada and collect my retirement fund.
Well, that's a big deal. What are you going to do with the money?
Well, start a foundation to study oozes. Sten had a specific request, but I'm sure I'll have extra money. I'll live comfortably, no doubt.
Wait, what do you mean a specific request?
Oh, right before I left town, a hobgoblin approached me, claiming he was Sten, and said that it was your doing, and requested that I study oozes, and told me about your adventures. He said that somebody turned into a dragon. It seemed rather far-fetched for me.
Well, if you must know, he was telling the truth. It's a long story, but that was, in fact, Sten that you were talking to.
Well, I assume that much because he had some knowledge that he certainly couldn't have unless he was Sten. But the story seemed rather far-fetched, but you backing it up, I must admit it, that it's true. I can't believe you have a dragon that you know by name. That's very impressive. It's getting a bit late. Would you perhaps want to go and have dinner or something before I have to leave on the morrow?
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea.
As you walk out of the courtyard with Carter, he, like, gentlemanly, like, takes your arm or offers an arm to you.
Aw.
And you see a moment of huffy lordling behind you as a snubbed Hector marches out of the courtyard.
Again, just if ever he does anything to try to get attention, I will just pretend not to notice.
Nice. So you guys head out into Uptown. Carter and you are both flush with cash. All these restaurants cater to you exclusively for the small amounts of gold that you're throwing out. What did you want to get?
Let's get seafood.
Carter, as you guys are walking and you say seafood, he's like, I would recommend it. We're quite far away from any bodies of water. The large industry around here is, of course, cattle and cheese. They have quite a few good wine bars. How about we visit one of those?
That sounds amazing. It's as if you read my mind, you clairvoyant man, you.
You guys go down into a cellar that has this vast selection of wine. The wine's okay, but like the cheese is excellent. You can tell that this place, clearly their main export is fine cheeses.
Oh man, I can't wait to tell Sten about this.
As you are having dinner with Carter, do you want to ask him anything? Or press him for any more information about something?
Well, I do want to ask him for general advice because, you know, after he leaves, I'm going to be trying to tackle this on my own. And if I'm going to go, when it comes to Quinn, if I'm going to go the route of trying to stealthily find out more information before approaching him, especially the approaching part, I want to know how he thinks I should go about that, and if there's anyone in town that he thinks I should talk to first.
Okay, so Carter's on your side, so he's going to make a quick history roll to see if he knows anything that would specifically help you, and he rolls a 26. He goes off on a long, rambly lecture of the history of Black Hill, which just takes you back to college. He informs you that the current king of Black Hill is named Solemn Gallic.
Solemn Gallic.
Who is the 7th king of Black Hill. This line is very new. This city was conquered about 214 years ago by the Emperor Hadrian of Hadrian's Empire. Apparently he won the city in a duel of single combat against the Chronic of the Thousand Tribes, the chieftain.
Oh, so it's like Black Panther.
Something like that. He does one of those things that historians do where he's like, oh, you know, there's this story and there's this story and there's this story. But like the most agreed upon story is this one. He also informs you that the nobility here is expected to be both poets and warriors. And thus they are all referred to as scalds. And often duels are either by swords or by like public opinion, you both put out a poem or a song that is performed by a third party, and then like whoever people think is the best wins. He also informs you that for about 100 years, this kingdom has been protected by both its own military, as Hadrian's Empire military pulled out long ago. When Hadrian's Empire withdrew its official military forces, they were attacked by the orcs, and the Avzal military stepped in to help them. And since then, they have been in a very close military alliance with the Avzal Empire.
I see. And I'm sure everyone is thrilled about this.
He informs you that for a long time, people were extremely distrustful of this old and ancient enemy. Hadrian's Empire fought against the hobgoblins of the Avzal for a long time. And to have these ancestral enemies come and help you was a hard decision, but it happened. But it's been about, I don't know, 100 years since that happened, so it's become very normalized. Old enemies, new friends.
Okay, gotcha.
After that, he merely inquires more about your adventures in the Cold Forge and gasps at the appropriate moments. Do you tell him that you are a different type of sorcerer now?
Yeah, I don't see the harm in telling him.
He seems appropriately impressed and almost horrified that you are so close to being an alien creature.
How do you think this has been something within you all along, or is this something the dragon did to you?
I think it's something that the dragon did to me. I don't think this is something that's been inside of me since the beginning.
Well, I imagine people will begin to fear you to some degree. To be like the dragon priests of the kobolds, I can't imagine what people in the court will think.
Well, I don't plan on going around and announcing it to everyone I see, exactly. You know, I don't necessarily think everyone needs to know.
Ah, of course. Hush, hush.
Shh. He is clearly getting into his drink a bit of this wine and has very flushed cheeks.
All right, before he gets any drunker, I want to specify, is there anyone in town that might be helpful if I wanted to talk to them about Quinn or somehow get within 10 feet of him?
Well, I believe for anyone in town, it should be the easiest for someone of your station, especially being, if not blood relatives, at least a familial connection. You have the same name. It should be quite easy to get close to Quinn. Although, while we were there, he wasn't announced, but that's not unusual.
Okay, but the problem is, I don't know if he wants to see me.
Well, if you want to see him secretly, I recommend you use your arcane magics to sneak in.
Ah, yes, that always leads to good things.
Indeed, and if he doesn't want to see you, you can sneak right back out.
Right. Okay, well, thank you. I hope that, you know, at least some of your thoughts will remain with me. Any good thoughts that you can send my way would be appreciated.
Of course, I only wish you the best. You've been so helpful to me. There was a moment where I truly thought I was old and about to fail in my moment of triumph. And you and your party really brought it together.
Well, we certainly try.
Unless you have more things you want to bother him about, you end up carrying an old drunk man over your shoulder. Or convincing some young strapping lads to do the same.
Probably the latter.
to his bed as he continues to babble on about interesting various archaeological finds that he has been vaguely involved in.
Yes, yes, I'm sure it's all very interesting.
Yes. It seems I've fallen over onto a mattress.
Oh, how convenient. Why don't you stay there for, like, the next 8 or 9 hours?
This sounds like a capital idea. Yes.
I'm full of those.
Yes. Good evening, Ms. Milano. Oh, I should walk you to your bed, of course. This is a gentlemanly thing to do.
And he starts to almost get up, but then falls back down and
is like, oh, the world is spinning. Goodness, I haven't been this drunk for quite a while.
Oh, yes, that's okay. Please stay where you are. I'll be fine. Thank you.
Okay, so the first night passes as you find some lodging. Do you want to lodge in Uptown, where things are nice, as Carter has gotten a place there nearby the Avzal merchants, or do you want to go somewhere else?
Well, Eden is an uptown girl who's been living in an uptown world.
Fair.
So she will want to get a room uptown.
Okay. You get a room at the Golden Dragon. This is a pretty swanky hotel. It has quite a bit of statuary in the shapes of dragons with gold filigree on them. But other than that, it's nothing special. You get a room there, bed's nice, and you sleep for the night and awake the following morning. After a couple of hours of doing the regular recovering from a long trip, bathing and eating a strong breakfast, a hearty breakfast, you see a bleary-eyed Carter coming down the stairs, and he is making ready to leave.
How are you feeling?
Like I was just bashed in the head by a savage. It's awful. How did I ever do this?
I was afraid that's what you would say. I don't know how much of last night you remember. Not that, you know, anything particularly crazy happened, but you did, you know, you really enjoyed your wine. Not that I blame you.
Well, if I'm going to do it, I might as well do it to celebrate. I have accomplished the impossible.
Well, you're right. There is a lot to celebrate. You deserve it. I certainly hope you recover quickly.
I'll have to recover on the road. I've already agreed to continue on with this caravan. They're heading south to Zograda. But he wipes his eyes and sort of looks around blearily. One of the tavern workers comes over and hands him a goblet of water.
Oh, thank God, sir.
And he starts to sip it.
But I'll be leaving before noon. I assume you're heading to the keep to speak with your brother?
Possibly. I don't know. I am trying to decide if I want to perhaps find out a little more about what he's been doing first. I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but my fear is that I want to see him, but he does not want to see me.
Well, I can't imagine why. But I may have missed this part of the conversation. If you want to kill some time and think about things, I would recommend seeing the local sites. There's the Demon Forge. It's a very dramatic name, but it's just a forge. And then there's the Unbreakable Temple. I believe there's a tour which gives you a sledgehammer and you get to hit the wall.
Oh, that is something. And the purpose of hitting the wall would be...
Yeah, just to see that it won't break.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I'm not so sure if I would do it myself, especially now as my head is ringing already.
Understandable.
He sits down to a plate of eggs that is placed in front of him, and he looks at it and, like, does a little hand over his mouth herk, but starts to shovel it down anyway.
Aw.
So what's next for Eden?
Okay. Before attempting to see anyone at the keep, I will kill a bit of time. How about visiting the forge?
Okay. You step out after saying a fond farewell to Carter, who he squints his eyes at you and waves. You step out onto the street with Frisian and carry on to the north of Midtown, where you saw those smokestacks before. And as you get closer, you realize that there must have been five before, because there's a large ruin where clearly one of those stacks has fallen down and large amounts of the stone have been cleared away, but there's clearly a ruin where one of them should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones are just blazing hot, and there's just a ton of men around it manning it and throwing iron and coal into these four stacks that still remain and pouring out molten metal into various molds. Roll a history real quick.
Okay. Eden rolled a 16 in history.
As you're looking at this, you remember reading about them. When this city was first taken, they started using them because they were there. But then after using them for a while, they realized that they produced superior steel and iron to normal forges because they burned so much hotter. And in an effort to figure out how they worked, they tore one apart. And in tearing it apart, they were unable to figure out what the difference was in what they were doing to what the orcs were doing before them. And it,
way to go, guys.
It was deemed more efficient to just leave the four intact and continue using them. But as you're looking around, the main thing you realize that's out of place is you. Like, all the swarthy, sweaty workmen look around and see a very fine lady gazing on and start getting their flex on.
I mean, well, at least I'm not unwelcome.
No,
that would suck.
They seem to be like, yeah, we're good. You actually hear a foreman type fella holler out, "You're being watched, ladies! Make it look good!"
Is that like the D&D version of catcalling?
None of these men are catcalling you, that's for sure.
Awesome.
The foreman is berating his men.
Ah, right, duh.
With sexism. So, you've checked out the Demon Forge. Is there anything else you want to check out while you're in town?
I want to spend money and buy things.
Go for it. Spend money, buy things. What do you want to buy? I can send you the whole list of things you can buy.
Oh, snap. Yes.
This link should work.
Oh, my.
While you're in this town, you may purchase any mastercrafted weapons or armor of a metal variety. That may not be Eden's bag, however.
Oh my gosh, there's so much stuff.
And you can just say Eden shops and then figure it out what you want and do not want later.
Okay, well yeah, Eden is gonna shop like crazy.
Eden peruses the town, realizes that a lot of what this town has in abundance is armor, weapons, and cheese. And some leather. Like, leather's going on pretty well here as well. It seems like they slaughter quite a few animals as well.
I want to buy a moderately generous-sized piece of the finest cheese I can find as a gift for Sten.
Okay. You find a wheel of Black Hill Brie aged 7 years in wax.
Yum.
It only costs you a few gold, but you set it back in your hotel room and finish your shopping for the day in addition to the various doodads that you got for yourself and gifts to send home, I assume.
Yes, of course. Get all the doos and the dads.
Indeed. Do you want to swing by the Unbreakable Temple as well?
Sure. You know, just so I can say that I've seen it, although Eden does really not have any interest in taking a large hammer and hitting a wall just because.
As you approach the temple, which you can see from a distance pretty easily as there is a ominous-looking tall spire, as you look around, at least the front entrance, it doesn't seem like there's a bunch of goons hitting it with a sledgehammer. That must be something that happens on the back, sort of on the down low. But as you look in the front, it looks familiar. It looks like the temple, at least by the way people are treating it, it looks like the temple in Obelik. There is a paladin standing out front. He is wearing the crest of the Flaming Rose. The doors are open, and people continue to stream in and out of it.
All right, well, I will casually walk in, just follow the crowd. I assume that where these people are going is perhaps where I want to be going.
Indeed. You step into the temple, and as you look around, in the center of the temple are 5 pillars. That appear to be placed like the number of 5 on a dice, on a 6-sided die. They've the one in the center reaching up the very center of the spire. There are carvings, intricate carvings all over each one. They're all made of the same black stone of the walls and the temple itself. As you look around the edge of the room, there are alcoves for the various gods. One thing that you notice pretty much right away is often there's very prominent spots for the gods that are valued by humans, like Pelor and Moradin and Bahamut, like justice and light and, you know, society and building things and all that good stuff. But in this one, all the gods are relatively equally placed. But at the end, in a place of honor, is a pedestal with a big ebon spooky looking eye wreathed in stylized flame and blood. And you recognize this as a shrine to Grumsh, the god of slaughter.
Oh my.
People appear to be mostly avoiding it.
Okay. Is there anything else to see?
It depends. Do you want to look closer at anything? Because right now I am assuming you're sort of standing in the entrance looking around. These are the things that are obvious.
Okay. Well, So the folks in the crowd, when they enter the temple, are they kind of dispersing in different directions, or does everyone seem to be heading to one location?
Most people seem to be heading towards the shrines that you identify with, Pelor and Arathis. Some go to other gods that you assume they have a specific prayer in mind. Like, you see some guy who looks like a herder. He's got that really rough leather clothing on. He walks over to Melora and starts praying, and you assume probably praying for, like, a blessing on his herd kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, no one is going to the Grumsh altar, even though it is the largest, and the most humans are going to Pelor, and there are some hobgoblins about that are alternating between Pelor and Asmodeus.
Out of character, I don't think I recognize the latter name.
Asmodeus is the god of tyranny.
Oh, interesting.
or
tyranny,
as the hobgoblins would call it, the god of order.
Ah, of course.
Of structured society.
Well, if I have an opportunity to pray for something, may as well go for it. How about praying for wisdom? Yes, I think that's a good idea. Something I'm going to need, I think.
Wisdom is the knowledge to do the right thing. So that's more of a subjective god to go to. So which one do you want to go hit up right now?
Ooh. Well, if I get to choose, I mean, I kind of want to go with the one who's got a winning track record as far as, you know, being helpful. So I would probably head towards Paylor.
Okay, that tracks, as that's the one you were raised with. You head over to Paylor. It's a bit crowded at this thing, but roll a religion as you pray for wisdom in general. Or do you want to try to get the answer to something?
I mean, just in general, she's going to be thinking about wanting wisdom to navigate the upcoming meeting with her brother that she expects to have. Yeah, I guess you could say just in general.
Okay. I'm going to go for regarding the meeting with your brother, because that's a lot more tangible.
Okay. And did you say wisdom save?
No, a religion check as you go and pray.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, sorry. Had wisdom on the brain.
Yes, wisdom save was, do I know what to do?
Right, yeah. Whoops. Oh boy. Eden rolled a 9 in religion.
As you approach the altar of Paylor, and when you get to it, you know that it's the altar of Paylor because there's a crowd around it. But once you get to it and truly look at it, it is shaped like a fire on the horizon kind of relief, rather than you expect it to look like, which is like a wise father with a halo sun kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little bit weird. And then as you start to do your, you know, prayer that you learned as you were a baby, basically, just the crowd around you jostling you, it just feels like, how are you supposed to commune with a god in a situation like this? And eventually you get frustrated and leave.
All right. So very successful interaction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Gods, very titchy. You don't want to aim for that big, scary eye in the corner? I mean, in the place of honor?
I'm sorry, come again?
I'm just saying, you don't want to go pray at the god of slaughter.
Not particularly. No, I think that would be a hard pass.
Reasonable. Okay. You step out of the Unbreakable Temple with your past history role and just sort of being in this building. You realize that they absolutely probably tried to tear this building down and rebuild it as a proper temple to Paylor, but just whatever it is, like, this building is just immune to damage, and no matter how much they tried, they could not break it down.
Interesting. Seems that Grunch, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Perfectly.
It seems like he's watching out for his crib.
So, according to Carter, you've seen all the important parts of town, the historical parts at least.
Mm-hmm.
And as you step out of the temple, you look to your right and you see the Black Keep. The gates are somewhat ajar and guarded, but you know that just basically saying your family name and marching in with your head held high will get you in there.
Or we could have fun sneaky times.
Or you could have fun sneaky times.
I want to have fun sneaky times!
Yeah, fun sneaky times as I drum my fingers together Mr. Burns style.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go invisible. I want to go invisible, and I want to go sneaking around.
Okay, so you step out of the temple and walk down the street a little bit into a nearby alleyway that you find is empty, and weave a spell around yourself. The wind swirls for a moment, and you can feel that you are no longer visible. And you step out into the street, and people start walking straight at you, and you have to dodge them.
Ooh, the fun part.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to try to walk into the keep and try to find your bro?
Hells yeah.
So the first thing I want from you is a dexterity save.
All right, not bad. Eden rolled a 15.
You dodge down the street through the crowds, managing to not get hit by any passersby, and step through the gate, find yourself in the courtyard. Look around you, and you realize that you have a pretty large building to search for your brother. You see in front of you is probably like the royal court. To your right is probably the guardhouse. To your left is probably the royal stables and also some other storage buildings. And then past that, through the royal court and the stables, beyond it is this very tall tower where Carter said mages used to reside.
Okay. Well, let's head towards the court. See what there is to see over there.
And that's fairly simple, as the doors remain open most of the time and open frequently when they aren't open all the time. You step into a royal court and you find that nothing's going on. There's like no feast, there's no audience. It's pretty early in the morning. Well, actually, you've been sightseeing all day, so it's midday and there's nothing really going on in here. You see the big chair where a king should sit, a couple chairs next to it, probably where council would sit on a raised dais, and you look around in the surrounding rooms as servants seem to be going around doing their thing, but nothing's going on in here.
Lame. All right, well, if that's the case, then I guess if the stables are right next door, at least peek into them, even though I guess I don't really expect to see anything crazy in there. And if nothing turns up there, then head past that area towards the tower.
Roll a luck, because the stables is a pretty fluid situation, because there might be something going on in here.
Okay.
Just a d20, no modifiers.
Ooh, Eden rolled a 17.
There is a particularly handsome stable hand grooming a horse.
Hello.
And humming to himself as you wander the stables, occasionally, like, even though you're invisible, a horse will reach out of its stall and like nuzzle your head.
Aww.
Nobody seems to notice you. You do, at some point as you're walking through, you hear the stable hand mutter to himself, "Am I supposed to get this ready today? No, they said Quinn was going to be in his tower till tomorrow, so I guess you're just getting a grooming." And just like starts brushing down the horse really hard.
Out of character, you said that he said that he was going to be here tomorrow?
That Quinn is going to be in the tower till tomorrow. So I guess you're just getting a grooming.
Okay. Oh, goodness. Well, now I know exactly where I need to go. That was quite a luck roll. All right. I guess if Eden knows that, she's going to go ahead and leave the stable and start heading toward the tower.
Okay. You head through a couple of various rooms. It takes a while, as you need to be very careful about opening doors yourself. As one, it's hard to maintain the spell, and two, people can see the door opening and closing, and that's suspicious as all get out. But most of the time, you're able to get through the doors other people open. And you find yourself climbing the spiral staircase of this tower. You get up to a large, thick oaken door that points towards the center of the tower as you are along a staircase. There are windows along this staircase, but they don't, like, it appears that there's no other way into this room except for this door.
I mean, if I were to open it myself, is there anyone around who would see the door mysteriously opening?
Not in the stairwell. The stairwell seems to be extremely empty.
Okay, so I guess my only fear is what's on the other side. Dang exactly. It. Think. I guess I can't use Misty Step because I can't see what's on the other side of the door.
Nope.
All right, if there is a way, if I could send Eve to try and find a window or any way to see into the room that's out of my reach, that would probably be ideal. Try to find out who, if anyone, is on the other side of the door. And I guess if there's no one in the stairwell, I can feel okay sitting down and trying to see through her eyes.
Okay. So you get to the top of the stairwell, you sit next to the door. Your invisibility fades as it requires concentration. And Eve, will just say, for simplicity's sake, Eve becomes invisible with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are one and the same. And Eve appears next to you on your shoulder. She's been sort of nestled there the entire time. And you sit down in the corner and give Eve the instruction to fly outside and look in the windows?
Correct.
Okay, you send her through a little arrow slit. She begins to flutter around the tower, looking in windows, and as you share her vision, And she glances through. As she's flying by, you absolutely see a young man in there. He is hunched over a desk, scribbling furiously. But the identity of this young man is difficult to discern as a bird flying past Aeroslits.
Ah, of course. All right, well, at this point, I guess Eve can come back, because really all I need to know at this point is there anyone on the other side of the door?
Right. There is somebody on the other side of this door, but they are not looking at the door or anything. So, assuming that this door is well-greased, you could conceivably sneak in.
At this point, I guess I really don't have any other choice, and I really, really want to continue to move forward.
One thing you do notice as a bird, looking at these windows, you realize that while the Aeroslits are Aeroslits, further down the tower, they are very narrow, but at the very top, they get much wider. So while probably Sten couldn't crawl through one of these, you could.
Ooh.
If you were to somehow get outside the tower and try to go in through one of the windows.
Is it flying time?
I'm just saying there's options.
So, out of character, when it comes to Misty Step, when casting the spell, at that moment, do I have to be able to physically see where I want to go, or is just knowing what's there enough to be able to do it?
See, this is a weird thing, because you have a familiar, and you can see through the familiar's eyes. I'm gonna say, if you do the whole rigmarole of, like, get my familiar on the other side of the wall, and I know relatively where I am, you can Misty Step through a solid object that you can't see through. It's one of those things that you will appear on the other side of the wall as a limp ragdoll. Well, not a limp ragdoll, a unfeeling person with the senses of an owl looking at yourself.
Okay, sure. As much fun as flying is, I think that would be the easier option at this point. So I'm going to go ahead and Misty Step through that door.
Okay. Eve is going to roll a stealth, because one of the things she has to do is land on a windowsill, because she has to have consistent sight of what you're looking at. She has to, like, look at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And while birds landing on the windowsill is not unusual, having an owl land on the windowsill is kind of unusual.
Right. Oh, come on, Eve.
As Eve, you land on the windowsill, and the young man at the desk starts a moment as Eve scuffs around with her claws on the black stone, looks up, looking at the owl. You see your brother's face looking at the owl. He has deep bags under his eyes and hair that you remember never being unkempt. But right now, it just looks like he hasn't taken a shower or anything in like 4 or 5 days at least. And he stands up, holding a quill in his hand, and starts to walk towards Eve with a sort of curious look on his face.
Oh boy. Well, as long as it's a curious look and not a I'm gonna kill you kind of look.
So as Eve, you hold position?
Yes. Yes, hold position.
Quinn approaches. He's wearing a sort of wrinkled robe. Looks like he slept in it. Walks up to Eve and gently puts his hand out and slows as he approaches, like, don't be afraid, scared little thing.
Aww.
And attempts to pat the owl's head.
Eve would totally be into it.
Eve ruffles her feathers and gets scritched for a moment. And you hear Quinn both through the door. Well, actually, no, you just hear Quinn through Eve's ears. Oh, aren't you just the most tame little thing? He takes his hand away and steps back and looks, like, startled and starts moving his hands together in arcane gestures.
Retreat.
As Eve flies away, you see him as Eve, like, turns her head around and looks back. You see him, like, halfway out the window. Wait!
I'm not gonna stay and find out what you were about to do. None of this.
Eve flies away, and Quinn eventually steps back into the room, and you hear him scuff across the floor as you pop back into your own body, and you can hear him through the doorway, and you hear a chair groan under his weight.
Perfect. So wait, I can move now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm all the way back to me. All right, well, I want to carefully approach the desk and try to get a closer look at what it is that he's been writing.
So you're outside the door, and he hasn't left. He just went to the one side of the room and then went back.
Wait, I thought I'm still on the other side of the door.
Did you want to sneak in while he was looking out?
Oh, well, I thought that was the whole point of sending Eve in that direction so that I could cast Misty Step.
Oh, you wanted to Misty Step behind him. Never mind. Okay, that makes perfect sense. As he is scritching an owl, you appear behind him, and he steps back startled, but begins to cast at the owl, and the owl flies away, and as yourself behind him, you snap back to your senses. You see him thrust his torso out the window and wave at the bird. Wait, come back! But you are now standing behind him, and it is mere moments before he turns around.
Okay, well then I want to come back to my senses as quickly as I can.
It's done. You're in your own body. You're standing behind him.
All right, well, then I want to wait for him to... I guess I don't necessarily need to do that. Actually, this is probably better. So while he's still at the window, I want to walk over to the desk and get a closer look at what exactly he was furiously scribbling earlier.
Okay, awesome. Without casting invisibility on yourself or anything, you walk over to the desk and look down at what he was working
at. Oh, hang on. I'm not invisible anymore.
No. You have to maintain concentration to keep invisible. Do you want to cast invisibility again?
Oh, yes. Oh, crap.
Keep track of how many spells you're casting, but
no,
yes,
I am.
You have
am.
Enough. Okay, so...
Yeah, barely. This is, I think... Yeah, especially since I just cast Misty Step, this is the last invisibility that I can cast until I have another long rest.
I think you can use higher level spells to cast invisibility, even if you're not using them on more people. You can just downgrade the spell to just make you invisible.
All right, easy enough.
So you become invisible right before he turns around, and there's a small swirl as some pages on tables lift up corners in the light breeze in the room. He looks disappointed and a little confused, but begins walking back across the room towards his desk. As you're invisible in the room, he is about to walk through you, and it's not too hard to sidestep him. But as you go and look over his shoulder, I want you to roll a stealth, because he could still conceivably hear you at this point. Roll it at advantage, by the way.
Alrighty.
Because you are invisible.
Eden rolled a 14 in stealth at advantage.
That is just good enough.
That's what I love to hear.
You stand over your stepbrother's shoulder and look down at the paperwork he's working on.
Not stepbrother, adoptive brother, or Eden's the adoptive sister, I guess.
What does that make him to you?
So Eden's parents are his biological parents and her adoptive parents. So Eden would be his adoptive sister.
Oh, okay. And he is your adoptee brother?
I don't know if that's the proper term.
Neither do I. I should probably look it up.
Okay, actually, I will. Hang on. Okay, it goes both ways.
Okay, so he is also your adopted brother. Gotcha. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Glad we got that straightened out. Very important. So you look over his shoulder and see a complex arcane rune that he is in the midst of sketching out. He has a extremely long scroll that you can see that is like spread out between two stones to keep it flat on a desk. One side is spilling off the table and clearly has a ton more writing on it. As you're looking at this, roll an arcana just to see what he's doing.
All right. Eden rolled a 14 in arcana.
He is sketching out a spell. It is strange because you've heard for a long time about how talented your brother was and how good he was at this, but he is writing like a textbook bad spell. It's inefficient. It's got way too many redundancies. The like input output is like there's a lot of waste in it. It's almost as if he wants this spell to be extremely inefficient.
Huh. Amateur. Or either that or you're about to screw somebody over big time.
It doesn't seem like he's making this spell in the appropriate residuum laced inks and things like that to make a spell scroll that's viable to be castable, to use to cast. It seems like he's more doing theoretical constructions.
Can I tell what the spell is supposed to be for exactly?
The spell is supposed to be for protection from extraplanar beings.
Okay, interesting.
It's a relatively simple spell, something that an apprentice wizard might practice and learn. It's pretty standard stuff. While you're looking around this room, though, you see a number of other scrolls stacked up in a large sort of bookshelf, but it's the crosshatch wood for rolled scrolls. You also see a large, meticulously made map of the northeastern quadrant of the continent of Nihilhok pinned to one wall. You also see a small table with some pretty crusty bread and some cheese that's kind of dried out, as well as a wineskin.
Delicious. So the other scrolls, is Eden able to see what's written on them, or are they all rolled up and sealed?
They are all rolled up. They're not sealed. So Eden would have to pull them out and open them, unfurl them, which would involve a lot of like crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
Right.
Paper.
Okay, well, I suppose I'll watch him for a little longer, at the very least to see if he moves on to something else, or if he's just going to work on this awful spell for the rest of the afternoon.
He finishes the spell within the next 10 minutes or so. You see him finish, sort of expecting him to, like, do the Bob Ross when you're watching him paint, and you see him, like, what you think is ruin something, but then just brings it back and fixes it amazingly. But at the end, the spell is purposely inefficient, and you're just kind of wondering as to why. But at some point when he's done, he leans back in his chair, sort of takes a deep breath, stands up, picks up his stale bread, and starts munching on it, and walks over to the map and pulls out a compass and sticks a pin in Zlograda and pulls the compass out to a certain diameter and does a sweep and then draws a couple of lines in light pencil. And then, no, that won't work. And then he walks back to the desk and pulls the paper off, because he has a large scroll of paper, and he pulls it out and has a fresh sheet of paper and starts drawing a new spell. Equally as inefficient, if not more so.
Well, geez.
And while he is doing that, he pulls a scroll out occasionally from nearby the desk, and when he unfurls it, you realize that he's looking at a charcoal sketch of the stone tablet that you recovered.
What about the stone tablet?
Every once in a while, he goes to reference a charcoal sketch of the stone tablet that you guys recovered. He goes to reference the stone tablet that you guys recovered.
Hmm.
It doesn't appear to be in the room, but he appears to have a, like, good charcoal etching of it.
Okay. Think. Don't really see the point in hanging around and watching him write down horrible quality spells all afternoon. Who else would be in the tower at this point? I mean, if anyone.
You assume that somebody's bringing him these meals. Someone must also be picking up his chamber pot, which is over there in the corner.
Ugh.
But for the most part, it seems like this is the room that's in the tower, and the rest of the tower is just stairs. Also, you do realize that these spells aren't inoperable. They're just inefficient.
Right.
Which is kind of hard to do as well. He's making them as bad as they could possibly be while still working.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, that takes its own form of skill. Right. Well, I suppose I can leave at this point and try to come up with a plan for coming in a non-invisible manner next time. Or, you know, arranging a meeting where no one's invisible.
Right. Okay. Do you want to escape via the door, or just by, like, jumping out a window and flying before you hit the ground, or slow falling, which is also a spell you have?
I have a spell called slow falling?
Yeah. Feather fall, actually, I think is what it's called.
Oh, snap! There it is!
Yes, you can basically parachute to the ground.
Dang! Like Elastigirl, except without the shape-shifting.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I want to do a feather fall.
Okay. You slide out of one of the windows, you see, because when things are invisible that you made invisible, you can still see them. You hurtle towards the ground, a semi-shimmery Eve comes diving down towards you, but you tell the wind to catch you, and it does. It swirls underneath you, and you land gently near the edge of the courtyard.
All right, well, I guess I can go ahead and uninvisible myself now.
Mm-hmm. You appear, and no one gives you a second glance, except for the fact that you have an owl on your shoulder, which is pretty cool. People are like, whoa, look at that. So how exactly do you want to introduce yourself to get you in there?
Well, I guess I'll just go ahead and tell the truth. I am the Lady Eden Milan, and that ought to do it.
All right. You go up to the nearest serving person of not the bottom rank of people and tell them that you're here and that you're a noble and why are you ignoring me? And immediately there's a hubbub as they scramble to make sure this noble does not feel snubbed. And you are brought before someone of appropriate importance who apologizes profusely for not noticing you earlier. And wondering how you got in here without anybody knowing. But not in like a, how dare you sneak in, but in like a, oh, those guards at the front door, they're totally slacking off by not telling us you were here.
Yeah.
But they do tell you that it will take some time before you may see your brother. He is not to be disturbed by his own order.
Hmm. Okay. Did he say for how long he did not want to be disturbed?
Until tomorrow. He said he had some very important work to do, and no matter what, should the Empress herself come, he should not be called down.
Well, that sounds pretty final. All right, well then, in that case, I will simply return tomorrow.
They, of course, nod profusely, and as you're leaving, you run into Galena temporarily. She seems to be passing through town, and she was in her own game and ran into you at this point, and told me to inform you, as herself, that she was traveling with a group of dwarves to go on past the city, but these dwarves were selling residuum, like barrels and barrels of it.
Oh, is she with Heisenberg?
Something like that.
So, wait, why are they selling barrels of residuum? Just 'cause?
She tells you that somebody named Hector is buying them, and buying them at way over market value. And that they've just been buying them for months. Like, way more than they could possibly use.
Crap. It has escaped me. Which dude did we meet earlier that was named Hector?
The Ponzi man in the courtyard. The Hector Scald.
And he's buying up lots of residuum. Okay. Good
both
to know.
Both him and others, she tells you. But her specific caravan, run by the Bitterbrand family, was selling them to him. And she thought that might be useful to you. But she very quickly has to go back towards the Headscraper Row part of town, which is a bunch of dwarven inns.
Headscraper Row?
I'm sorry, Headscraper Ditch is what it's called.
Oh, they come up with the best names.
But you recall having passed by this place, and it was just a bunch of buildings with very low ceilings.
Great.
But pretty quickly, she gets back into town. She had plans with other people.
Lame. Fine, leave. I didn't want to see you anyway. Okay.
She smiles at your antics and runs off because she's a jerk. I don't know.
Yeah, Galena, you're such a jerk.
Indeed, but you are told that your brother will be free tomorrow. Do you want to do anything with your free day?
At this point it's probably been...
Oh, I mean your free evening, I guess.
Other than stuff my face... And have some fine cheese? I don't think so.
You stuff your face with some fine cheese, get a good night's rest, and wake up the following morning. And find yourself back at the keep. At this point, they realize that you, like, left and got a room, and they scramble again and offer you a room at the keep. Knowing that you are not a lowly noble, you're a pretty hefty noble from Medina, and they don't want to look bad. Making you lodge yourself.
You know what? Yeah, that's fine. I will go ahead and take it. I will go ahead and stay there.
They bring in your horse, and that very handsome stable hand goes and starts brushing him.
Oh, hello.
Tastefully ignores all the drool. But you find yourself in the keep again, and do you want to wait for your brother or bother anybody else?
Who else is around that I would have noticed by this point?
The king himself is around, but you are generally, like, kept away from him.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think I want to bother the king.
Unless you specifically ask to go, like, be like, I want to go get an audience with the king. Because it's one of those things where they're not like, you can't be here. They're like, oh, would you like to go over this way? Which is away from the guy who's about to be here.
Ah.
There are also several nobles that you see pattering about which you could bother. If you give me a generalized description of who you want to bother.
I mean, I'm kind of drawing a blank here on my end.
Okay. So you wait for Quinn to come down from his tower, which he does. About midday comes stumbling down. You get the notification that he's down, but he is refreshing himself as he's been locked up there for about 3 days now.
Oh, uh-oh. What do you mean refreshing himself?
He's taking a bath and pooping.
Oh, okay.
A little while later, you hear a knock at your door in your finally appointed apartment in the keep on a second floor. A very polite knock that starts with, Eden Malone, Quinn is ready to... And then you hear like a, oh! And the door slams open and Quinn stands at the door. What? They didn't tell me you were here! And he runs in and hugs you.
Ah! Oh my gosh! Wow. I can't believe it's really you! Wow, this is amazing. Yeah, I guess I didn't really expect to be here either. This was sort of a last-minute arrangement. I heard rumors that you were here, and I wanted to come see you. I'm glad that you're happy to see me. I was actually kind of worried that you wouldn't be.
He did the, like, pick you up and spin you around thing, and then sets you down and has his hands on your arms. But he does like a little squeeze, and he's like, you got buff, little sis. Look at that.
Well, thanks. You know, I've learned a few tricks, you know, here along the way that I think would impress you.
Is your skin never mind. I mean, I'm super sorry. I've been on a project.
But it's been years. Nobody has heard from you in years. I don't understand. That's why I was worried that you didn't want to see me. I didn't even know if you were still alive. Why haven't you communicated with us? What's been going on?
I mean, no one could know where I was. It was very important that we maintained absolute secrecy. I've been doing big, important work. Trust me.
What kind of important work?
He, like, flips back the hair that's now tousled perfectly and says, what do you think? I'm saving the world.
You're saving the... she tries to hold back a laugh. Like a, you know, not like a mocking laugh, but sort of a teasing laugh, I guess. And I guess at this point, Eden doesn't really believe him, thinking like, oh, sure, you know, maybe he thinks he's saving the world, but it's, you know, or he's exaggerating or something like that.
He plops down on your bed and, what do you think, your big brother can't save the world? I hear someone didn't finish school.
How did you know about that?
I mean, I kept some tabs.
Well, I could have finished if I wanted to. I just decided that it wasn't for me, and I had more important things to do.
Well, I've heard you got in really good with the new king of Medina. Who knew that was going to happen the way it did? Goodness. Old king gets killed, second king gives you a big job. Got promotion?
Yes. Who on earth has been passing this info along?
Oh, I mean, it's kind of public knowledge through the grapevine. The lords about here, you've been kind of the talk of the town. I hope they've been treating you okay.
Oh, well, fair enough. You know, it sort of saying semi-sarcastically. Sorry, who? Did he just say, I hope they've been treating you well? Did I hear that right?
Yes, he is just speaking about the keep in general, like, I hope they've been treating you well.
Oh, no, everything's been fantastic so far. Everyone's been perfectly pleasant, very accommodating.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, but you know it's not going to be accommodating. He reaches inside his coat and pulls out a deck of cards, and he fans it perfectly open. You ready to lose?
Whoa, my goodness. This, you haven't changed at all. Want to play cards at a time like this. You know, is there a place that we can go to maybe just, I don't know, talk and just grab a bite to eat and catch up?
Are we secret talking, or are we just getting a bite to eat?
Are you saying that as James or Quinn?
As Quinn.
I mean, that's up to you. I don't have anything to hide. At least, I don't think I do.
Okay. There's this place. They've got really good steaks. I think it's the grill. I think it's actually a grill that is still around from when they conquered the city. It's great.
Well, I certainly won't say no to that. Sounds great to me.
So he hops up off the bed and makes sure you're ready to go. You open up your closet and it's full of clothes that are relatively fitted to you.
Whoa.
And he picks out some stuff and he's like, you should probably wear this. You won't stick out as much.
Wow. You guys come prepared. All right. Sure. If you think that's best, go ahead and change.
All right. And he steps outside while you change and hassles you while you're in there, being like, why are you taking so long? But once you guys get out on the town, he just starts talking about how great it's been. He's been traveling. He's gone all over the Avzal Empire. He's worked with a bunch of really great people. And whenever he mentions the Empress, you get this weird feeling like he's mooning over some girl that he met. Like this, it's the same kind of look in his eye. But he gets you to this restaurant and the steak is lovely. It's perfectly cooked to whatever you order. And he sits across from you and at some point stops and looks around. And he's like, I haven't asked you. What have you been up to? I mean, I know that you like brokered a peace treaty. That's big. I know the family's doing great. I know they got in a little bit of hot water. I was really thinking about quitting and coming home when that happened, when I heard. But by the time I really like made my mind up about it, you had already handled it. And I shouldn't have doubted you. I feel bad now.
Well, you know, I can handle myself sometimes. I guess I'll try to give... Gosh, crap, all this stuff that's happened. Eden would want to tell him about all that they've been through, but at this point, I guess she'll try to give him the shortest version possible, because that is a lot to go over.
He seems to already know the basics, like, up until the moment that you brokered the peace treaty, at least. He's like, you're traveling with this orc who has, he's got, like, demon blood in him or something, and this blind warrior who's cursed with madness, and this dwarvish bard, and this mysterious elf mystic, and that, of course, you're the leader of the group.
And this weirdo in a big hat.
Oh, that's the blind warrior.
Oh, right. Duh.
Like, he definitely has, like, the 15 people removed news version of you in his mind.
Well, you know, I'll let him think that everything the party has done is just as important and just as glamorous and high stakes as he wants to believe. Although, plenty of it really was very high stakes, but you know what I mean.
A lot of it, according to him, seems a lot less dangerous than what actually happened. It's like, you guys traveled north, and then there were some, like, peasants who didn't agree with you that attacked you, and then you guys managed to get past them without too much trouble, and then broker the peace treaty. Like, that's kind of how it goes down in the story.
No!
He's still impressed, because, like, a bunch of angry peasants attacked you with pitchforks and stuff. He's like, that's scary.
No, it was more impressive than that. We had all sorts of small victories on the way there. But you know what? All of that, it doesn't matter. Those are stories for another time. I've been talking for a while. I want to let you talk for a bit. You seem really, really excited about the work that you're doing for the Empire. You seem to be really secretive about it, and I don't know how much you can tell me, but how did this all happen?
Well, so in school, I never, like, really got a fire under my butt about anything, you know? And so I got out, I had my degree, I was designing this building that was going to make it easier to cast these sort of weather divination spells, and I just couldn't care less, you know?
Oh, but that sounds really cool.
I mean, it paid well, but it just, like, I want to do something with my life. And then there was a problem at the schools I used to be at. Do you ever meet those students that you were like, I'm sure he's going to flunk? And then he would switch schools, and suddenly he'd get way better, as if he got suddenly 3 or 4 years of experience under his belt, right?
Sure, I guess.
You maybe weren't there long enough, but it happened, trust me. And we all knew that they were making pacts with, like, demons and other bad extraplanar stuff. And this time he's like being kind of loud in the middle of this restaurant. And when he says demons, other tables react and are like, whoa. And then he finally leans in. So I think I finally get this opportunity because those packs never end well for them. And let me tell you, there's one thing out there that a lot of the students were getting into, and they are becoming a problem. The project that I'm on is going to stop it once and for all. And he like leans back and like smirks at you really hard.
Eden has sort of a puzzled, worried look on her face. Stop them? How? Exactly.
He looks around and little sis, I think if you finished, you might have a 10% chance of understanding if I explained it to you. But also, it's a secret, so I can't tell you. It might mess up the project. I'd love to tell you. I'll tell you when I'm done. I'll be a hero. We'll both be heroes. We can go home. I mean, you know, he like leans in again. I might be an Empress's consort, maybe.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess if it's that big of a deal and you'll be a hero, then you won't have to tell me because everyone will know. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather tell you because then I can rip your nose in it, but getting it through the news will be okay too.
Okay, well, she tries to kind of fake excitement. Oh, I can't wait to find out what it is. Yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be great.
He leans back and like puts his arm on the booth edge and like takes a sip of his wine and looks around the room, but then he sort of like, he thinks of something, he gets a light bulb above his head. Hey, in the stories I've heard about you, you have really powerful magic, but you never finished school. How'd that happen?
Well, it's kind of a long story.
Is it practical experience?
Sort of. More recently, not quite so much. Some really interesting, unexpected stuff has happened. Eden sort of thinking to herself at this point, like, do I want to tell him the whole background behind the wizard story and the kobolds and all of that stuff? I don't know. For some reason, there's just something like deep down telling her that maybe she should wait to try to explain that.
Roll an insight real quick.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. Eden rolled a 19 in insight.
He seems worried about you, and you get a sense that it's related to the last thing he was talking about. He's clearly worried that his little sis is making packs with extraplanar demons or something.
Oh boy. Look, I see the look on your face. If you're worried that I've made some sort of demonic pact, it is nothing like that. It's just a long story, that's all. You know, I'll tell you all about it next time that we have time to sit down and talk. It's getting late.
He looks out the window and sees the sun setting. He's like, I need to get back to work. If you're interested, we might have, I mean, if you're not going on cool adventures anymore, I might need someone here who can really channel some energy, you know? And if the stories are true, that's you.
What do you mean?
I can't tell you. I'm just saying there's maybe a job for you.
Really?
In next month or so.
Oh, in the next month? Okay. Wow, gosh. If I were to stay that long,
As of right now, you know you're waiting for at least another 25 days or so before people get back.
Oh, okay. Well then, yeah, I guess that would be fine. So she'll look back at him and she's being sincere, like, yes, I'm absolutely interested. I'd love to know more.
Oh, of course. I'll get you, as soon as I know exactly what I'm going to need, I will tell you. Anyway, I gotta go. I gotta get back up to the tower. I can only take these short breaks because what I'm doing up there requires massive concentration.
Oh, why on earth did you look like you had been up there for days? You look, I mean this in the nicest way possible, but you look really, really tired.
Tired is generous, and I appreciate it, little sis, but it's really an effect of constructing new spells, and that's all I can tell you. It requires a lot of concentration, and often I will spend the whole day or maybe a day and a half on one spell, and that means I can't fall asleep or lose concentration during that amount of time.
Oh, you're working on spells?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know you may not believe me, because, yes, I did drop out of school, but I have learned so much since then, and I think I could be of help. I'm just saying.
Roll a persuade.
Eden rolled a 15 in persuasion.
He looks incredulous, but reaches in a little handbag of his and pulls out a little piece of paper, a little pot of ink, and a little quill and says, okay then, draw me a protection scroll against only water elementals, but I want earth elementals to be able to get through.
Psh, no problem.
Okay, roll an arcana. Your DC is 20.
Oh boy. Oh, snap!
Damn!
Eden rolled a 21 in arcana. Ooh, I'm having a good night roll-wise.
You start scraping and he looks obnoxiously confident for a few minutes as you are scratching on the piece of paper. And at some point you have to, like, scrape out something, but, like, you get to the point where you're, like, pretty confident that it works and you push it over to him. And he looks down and is about to be like, ah? And then is like, oh no. Oh no, that does work. Damn, sis!
You sound surprised.
I am surprised. You got way better.
Oh, well, thank you, I think.
I remember when I gave you like these simple little logic problems before and you just couldn't solve them, but this is top notch.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad. Back in the day, I mean.
He says, all right, you can work with me. And we're going to go into a montage of the next 20 or so days.
Yes, montage.
You are going to not be invited up to his sanctum, but he is going to give you some contractor jobs. The first one he asks you for is basically he wants you to make a scroll of firebolt, but the firebolt has to not be directed and has to spread out into the surrounding region. Like, he gives you all these calculations, like it has to be this much energy. It's as if like 150 well-trained wizards were casting a single firebolt.
Jeez.
And a lot of that is like, don't let the atmosphere explode kind of calculations. And as you are putting around town, trying to kind of do this, you're able to get it done. But as you are working on this the first week, you get a message while you are eating lunch and sort of making doodles on a napkin from Guiche.
Uh-huh. I'm sure it just says, Eden, you are wonderful and amazing and perfect, and I miss you so much, and I just wanted to let you know. Right?
No.
Oh.
Silver in Hamel building is Absol plot to move energy like Carter's tablet. Quinn, possible enemy. Enchanted or collaborator? Coming to Black Hill with help. Geesh.
Holy crap.
And you can give him a short response, basically as part of the sending spell. You understand this.
Okay. I'll just say, oh boy. Because at this point, Eden really, really does not want to She wants to believe that there's some sort of misunderstanding and that Guiche has no idea what he's talking about. So Eden will just say, we'll be waiting for you. We'll let Guiche know where she's staying and just say, we'll meet up with you soon to discuss.
Okay. And after you receive that sending, you shortly afterwards finish this rune. It takes you the better part of a week and a half to do so, but you've made something that would disperse the heat evenly into different spectrums of light and heat and in various directions. He's given you basically like, assume this is on the ground over this much area. It's over a distance of 10 to 20 miles, basically. You were saying?
All right. So when Quinn gives out these assignments with all of these crazy specifications, is he personally explaining to me what needs to be done, or is this being delivered by somebody else?
He will give you the specifications himself and explain. Basically, he gives you a parchment with all the specifications written out, but then, like everything around there makes sense? You got it?
And I imagine if Eden were to ask him, what's with all these ridiculous specifications, that he would probably tap dance around, or, you know, not literally, but just kind of refuse to answer the question, or just say something like, oh, I can't tell you, you'll find out, blah, blah, blah.
He will inform you that it is a secret.
Of course.
He cannot tell you, and he will actually inform you that he is basically almost breaking the rules by doing this, but he's fairly positive that what he's giving you will not expose any trade secrets. He is also paying you.
Money, 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 money.
A significant quantity of money. Yeah. You accomplish the first goal, and he gives you a second task, which is specifically how much residuum would it take to break through this much rock?
Oh, that's not suspicious at all.
And generate this much heat on the other side of that rock.
Also, definitely not raising any red flags.
Over a certain, like, diameter, basically. Unseemingly large.
So you're saying this is the assignment that gets delivered after the really super complicated firebolt?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so conflicted. Eden would want to try to talk to him again before trying to complete this one.
Okay, he comes down for breaks about every 3 days, and you catch him in one of these, the first one after he gave you the assignment, and he looks a little bit more haggard. Like, he looked bad before, but now he looks truly, well and truly exhausted.
Oh, wow. Are you doing okay? I don't mean this the way it's going to sound, but okay, you know what? I'm just going to say it. You look awful.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, sis. I'm doing okay. I see the end stretch, and that's what gives me strength.
You just look like you haven't slept in 3 days. Are you sleeping?
I haven't.
Should be. The quality of your work isn't going to be worth anything if you don't sleep. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm going to find out if the quality of my work was any good when I get some sleep and check it tomorrow.
Okay, well, hang on. Speaking of which, I got your latest assignment, and I was just sort of curious about it. All of the assignments I've been receiving seem really crazy specific and have all these weird specifications, and yeah, I know that you said that, you know, you can't give me all the details because it's a big secret and but with this one, I don't know, it just seems weirdly specific, I guess, and I was just wondering what you or whoever's going to use this was planning to do with it. I mean, is there anything that you can tell me?
Roll a persuasion, see if you can, because that seems like a pretty powerful plea, especially to a bro.
Oh, was not a crit, but close. Eden rolled a 24 in persuasion.
After finishing eating, he claims that he will give you more specific instructions in a moment, but he takes you back up to the tower and looks around and he's like, I freaking hate this place. Okay, so this room is warded, so I could speak plainly. I'm going to tell you that this spell that I have you working on is very specifically for the defense of this city. It is not for the project at large, but it is also important, and it's something that I was supposed to be working on, but I don't have time.
The defense of the city? Because it sounds pretty offensive.
He looks out the window and points around at the black landscape around the city, spotted by green and brown occasionally where there are patches of dirt and wild grass, and says, do you know anything about volcanoes?
I know that they go boom and get really hot.
Yes, those are both true. This is a volcano. It's actually what's called a caldera. And this city is built on the cap. It looks flat out there, right? That's because what it used to be collapsed inwards. But it's still pretty hot and heavy down there. He points just down at the ground. If the city gets surrounded by the enemy, we have enough residuum to blow the entire field. And he just sweeps his arm out there.
Are you and everyone else in town expecting to get attacked anytime soon? Because you're sort of talking as if you are.
He blinks twice really hard at you with his very, very bloodshot eyes and points north. Orcs, that way.
Well, what reason do you have to believe that orcs are going to organize some sort of offensive on you and everyone in the city? How can you be sure?
They've been attacking all of our outposts and in general just skirmishing all over the border. Seems like they're probing for a big push.
I mean, but would you consider those acts of war? As far as I understand, it seems to be mostly motivated by stealing valuables from people who are clearly carrying them.
Well, that's certainly a secondary objective, but Umbria's never technically been at peace with the orcs. But this is unprecedented. It seems like they're gathering material to supply a larger push.
All right, well, at this point, Eden is not convinced, but she doesn't want to argue with him about this anymore because there's just no point. So she is going to pretend to be convinced and just say something along the lines of, oh, okay, well, you've been here longer than I have, and you certainly know what's going on better than I do, and so if you're sure, then okay, I believe you.
Mm, okay. He doesn't seem to be awake enough to gather that you are perhaps being not entirely truthful with him. But as you head back down and he takes his short break and then heads back into the tower and you begin to work on this project again, do you want to ask around and see if that is the conventional wisdom around here? If there's anyone specific you might want to bother about it?
Yeah, I think that's a very wise thing to do.
Who in general are you looking for? Are you listening around like the populace of the town outside the keep? Or are you going to go like take lunch with a couple nobles and see what they think about it?
I guess I'd probably rather listen to what just the ordinary civilians in town have to say.
So roll an insight as you were just trying to gather information from the town.
Oh, not great. Eden rolled a 9 in insight.
The general gist of what's going on is, hey, have there been more raids lately? Like, that's mostly what you get. And some people are like, ah, people talk. And other people are like, no, we're all about to die. As you are working on this project, is there anything you want to do with it besides do it to the best of your ability?
I'm not sure I do want to do it to the best of my ability.
You could certainly attempt to sabotage it, to make it too weak, but make it seem like it's good, or make it way too strong and make it seem like it's good, or just bring it back and be like, I couldn't do it, but here's all this work that I did.
Well, I don't want to do that. I think what I would want to do is design it in a way. I don't want it to backfire. I want it to be too weak to really accomplish anything. Like, you know, you light the fuse of a bomb, but, you know, instead of going boom, the fuse just kind of goes out with a whimper.
And that is really what this arrangement is to do, is when you look at this with the new information he just gave you, it is clearly they are planning to place residuum in key locations and detonate it in an attempt to make this volcano explode. Which, to you, seems like madness, because that would also destroy the city, so far as you know?
Yeah, I mean, if we're surrounded, then that seems like a horrible idea.
So I want you to roll an Arcana to attempt to do this in a fashion where it still looks like it should work.
Come on, baby. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Eden rolled an 11 in Arcana. Could be worse, I guess.
You spend much of the week, and you realize that trying to make this fail is very easy, but trying to make this look like it is at all reasonable and fail is very hard. Before you can even finish that, you receive another sending, this time from Connor. This one says, concur with Geisha's assessment of silver runes. Myself and Odette are coming to Black Hill as well. It is a sort of a, and then the message stops, and about 10 to 15 seconds later, sorry, I got excited. The runes around Hamels are a sort of energy sink, something to draw power away from somewhere else. Look forward to seeing you, Connor.
Oh, I miss Connor. Poor, sweet, innocent Connor. All right, well, if I'm going to reply, I'll just say, quick and easy, look forward to seeing you too.
Cool. So it is getting to the point where you're starting to expect people back. Is there anything else you want to do while you were here in between working on these projects and generally hanging out with your bro and looking around town, eating nice cheese and wine?
I don't think so.
Okay. Next time Quinn comes out of his tower, he arranges to get lunch with you. And as he's doing it, he again just looks beat. But he does smile weakly at you and say, that spell you didn't think I did that well, it was perfect. And asks for your progress on the residuum distribution calculations. And you have to give him either the finished ones that you think are accurate or a whole bunch of work basically showing that you don't know. Or just be like, I didn't actually work on it. Bye.
No, don't do that. Okay. I'm going to tell him that, oh, you know, I really tried and I couldn't figure this one out.
He looks over your work and is like, it looks like you're trying to achieve a really low yield. You know, it's theoretical. You can just assume that you have as much as you need. And he like starts looking through them and making marks. And he's like, don't worry. This is still really useful. I'm sure I can get away with giving you half pay on this. Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Don't even worry about it.
At the end of this, he is basically going to arrange to pay you 750 gold.
Dang, son.
500 for the first completed spell and 250 for the assistance on the calculations. And he pays you from his own common ledger. He hands you basically a check for this.
Nice. Oh, dang, that just doubled the amount of gold I'm carrying.
So this is going to go into the ledger. So it's just going to be a plus that much money. Unless you want to personally carry it.
No, no, let's not do that.
And as you sit in this restaurant and Quinn gets up to leave, you look out onto the street and see the first of the party returning to the city, and we will wrap for the evening. With that, Eden assists her brother in his clandestine work, but can she discover what secrets still lie locked away in his ebony tower? Find out next time on Sometimes Heroes.